Welcome to the Shiur in Svarno Parshas Kisisa. The Shiur this evening is co-sponsored by Harry and Etta Packer, marking the yard site tonight of her sister, Hinda Bas Harav Elkana, the Neshama Shel Avin Aliyah. It's also sponsored by Rabbi Meir and Sivi Friedman, marking the yard site of his grandmother, Chana Slato Bas Harav Shalom, Neshama Shel Avin Aliyah. In both cases, they should see much nachas ruach from the Tar Mitzvahs and Ma'isim Tovim that the entire families are involved in. Parshas Kisisa starts off with a discussion of the mitzvah of the Machzis HaShekel, giving the half shekel, contributing to the Mishkan. And as we know, we learned it not so long ago, the Torah relates the giving of the Machzis HaShekel to somehow protecting the Jewish people. Kisisa es Rosh B'nai Yisrael Ufkudeyem, when you count the Jewish people, V'nosnu ish kofer nafsho l'Hashem b'fkodosam. Each person should give a atonement for his soul when the counting is taking place. Lo yev lohem negef b'fkodosam. And the plague should not befall the Jewish people when they are being counted. Of course, we know the story which is related in Sefer Shmuel, Sefer Divrei Hayomim, how David HaMelech indeed counted the people and a terrible, terrible plague befell the people. What exactly is the relationship between counting and a plague? Why should a plague, or the notion of a plague, be related to counting? See, the Sforno shares the following fascinating insight. It says as follows, the very beginning of the Sedra. Ki hechrech haminyon b'ishei ha'odom. The fact that we have to count and take a census, the very presence of a census is to account for death. Why do you have to take a census, let's say, in the United States every 10 years? Because people are born, but conversely, people die. And ultimately, the existence of death is something that relates back to sin. Ka'omram, as Chazal say, Gemara and Shabbos, Nun Heyom and Aleph, Ein Misa Belo Chet. There's no such thing as death without some sin that brought it about. Again, this could be understood on an individual level, could be understood on a global level. It's the Chet Adam HaRishon, the sin of Adam HaRishon that ultimately brought death into the world. But be that as it may, whether it's understood on an individual level or on a collective level, there is a clear connection between death and sin, and there is a clear connection between death and the need for a census. The need for a census takes into account the fact that people have died. Uvechein kol minyan humazkir avon. Therefore, says the Sforno, by definition, the act of counting brings to mind the concept of sin. Because if we didn't have sin, we wouldn't have death. If we didn't have death, we wouldn't have a need for a census. V'lochein ye'us, she'itein kol echon kofer nafsho l'chvod ha'kel yisporach. It's therefore appropriate whenever we're engaging in a census, which again calls to mind the very idea of death and by extension the very idea of sin, any participant in that census should give something in order to atone for himself. You say, what's he atoning for? What sin did he commit? He may not have committed any specific sin, but the whole notion of census is bound up with the concept of sin. And the Ribbono Shel Olam thus will forgive one's sins. That's what it means in the Pasuk, when it speaks of giving the Machzis HaShekel as a kapara, as an atonement. It's an atonement because it counterbalances the whole concept of a census, which draws to mind the idea of sinfulness and death, which is the ultimately that which brings about the need for a census. So the Sforno doesn't address the issue of a plague per se, but based on his words, we can understand why a census would bring with it the possibility of a plague, the need to somehow protect against the plague. Because again, the very concept of a census calls sin to mind. It's similar, he doesn't draw this analogy exactly, but it's somewhat similar to what Chazal say, that Ein ha-satan mekatreg el b'shas ha-sakana. There are certain situations which cause our deeds to be more closely examined, and we're held to a higher standard under those situations. When a person puts themselves into a situation of danger, so the Ribbono Shel Olam looks at our deeds a little bit more closely than normal. He puts us under the microscope, so to speak, and we have to meet a higher standard in order to be protected. Any time that there's a census, by definition, it calls to mind the sinfulness of people in general that leads to death, and whenever our sinfulness floats to the top, so to speak, that brings about the possibility of a negev, that brings about the possibility of a plague, which has to be somehow counteracted. And the Machzis HaShekel is a manner in which this counteraction can take place. I think last year when we were learning the Ramban, we saw the Ramban has a discussion about the census which David took, and he says one cannot fathom that David HaMelech would have ignored the specific requirement of the Torah that a census only be taken through the Machzis HaShekel. So if that's the case, if we assume that David HaMelech did indeed demand that the people count themselves in some kind of indirect fashion, using a Machzis HaShekel or some other type of method of counting them, so then we come to the question, so how did the plague come about altogether? So the Ramban suggests that even the Machzis HaShekel, or counting indirectly, is not an automatic protection, but rather, any kind of counting brings with it the possibility of plague, and particularly if a person counts unnecessarily, if there's no really good reason to engage in the census, to engage in the count, that itself brings about the possibility of plague, and it's not so easy to deflect that by using the Machzis HaShekel. That's, he suggests, that David HaMelech did indeed use some kind of indirect manner of counting the people, and nonetheless the plague still came about because the Ribbono Shel Olam said, but why do you have to count the people? In the case, in Parshas Kisisa, apparently was deemed to be necessary. But in the case that David HaMelech was dealing with, the Ramban says, if you look in those psukim in Nach, the psukim start off by saying that there were no wars, everybody was at peace. So if everybody's at peace and you don't need to go to war, so what's the need for a census? Why do you have to unnecessarily introduce a census which brings with it the possibility of plague? Even if you use a Machzis HaShekel, it's not a guarantee. So that idea from the Ramban, again, you don't have to say the Ramban in order to say the Sfarno or vice versa, but the ideas fit together very, very nicely. The very concept of counting by definition invokes the sins of those being counted, according to the Sfarno. And as such, it's not an automatic that you can just prevent all of that by using the Machzis HaShekel. The Torah is saying, look, where needed, where you do have to count the people, so use the Machzis HaShekel, l'chaper on afshel seichem, as a way of somehow protecting the people who are being counted. But the better solution is to avoid the counting altogether, as the Ramban writes with regard to David HaMelech. Yeah, I think that's the idea. So why does it put the people under the microscope? Because the very idea of counting calls to mind the inevitability of death, and the inevitability of death calls to mind the sins that brought about, you know, the fact that people die. So there's a linkage between the notion of counting people and the idea of sin. It's almost like, you know, waving a flag and saying people must have sinned, and that's why we have to count the people again, in order to see who died, you know, since the last time we had a census. That's the idea the Sfarno is bringing out. On the basis of that, he says the Sfarno, that's how we can understand what the Torah then goes on to say, Ha'oshir lo yarbeh, v'hadal lo yamit. Everybody gives exactly the same Machzis HaShekel, rich, poor, you know, there's not the rich version of the Machzis HaShekel, the poor version of Machzis HaShekel. The rich man doesn't give more, the poor person doesn't give less. So what's the idea behind that? So very often, Darshanim, when they talk about this idea, talk about how the Machzis HaShekel is supposed to show the fundamental equality of the Jewish people. Everybody's the same. Everybody, no matter how rich you are, how poor you are, it's the same Machzis HaShekel. So the Sfarno says, yeah, that's true, but for the following reason. Because ultimately, the census is about death and sin. And death and sin is something that applies to everybody equally. Right? To paraphrase Ben Franklin, right? Death and taxes, basically, they're inevitable. They apply to everyone. So in a sense, that's, l'avdil. That's what the Sfarno is saying over here as well. Death in the form of what the census represents, and the Machzis HaShekel, the tax, is something that everybody bears equally. He'asher lo yarbeh v'hadar lo yamit. It doesn't matter what socioeconomic standing you have, but you're equal in terms of that inevitability of death and the fact that there must be some sin that brought about that death. Ki bozeh lo nikar shoa lifnei dol. In this regard, says the Sfarno, quoting, paraphrasing Apostle Kaniyov, there's no difference between rich and poor. All have to deal with death, and all ultimately have that death connected back to sin. A very brief idea from the Sfarno, which relates to something we spoke about last week. Last week we spoke about the fact that at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh, it talks about the Mizbach HaKtoras, the golden inner altar upon which the Ketores, the incense, was offered up. And the Sfarno calls attention to the fact that it's very odd, after the whole description of the Mishkan and the Big Day Kahuna and the Miluim, the inauguration of the Kohanim, all of a sudden, as it were, as if the Torah had forgotten about it, the Torah comes and says, oh, by the way, there's another keli, there's another piece of furniture in the Mishkan called the Mizbach HaKtoras. How come we're only mentioning it there? So the Sfarno developed the idea that the Mizbach HaKtoras fulfills a different role than the other aspects of the Mishkan. The Mishkan primarily, he says, is about bringing down God's presence and enabling us to recognize God's presence through the bringing of Korbanos. After those two aims have been achieved, so then the Ketores is a way of acknowledging and asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to accept our Korbanos. But it's sort of like a third stage. And since it's a third stage, unrelated to the two prior stages, or not directly related to the two prior stages, it's treated differently, and the keli, the piece of furniture which relates to that experience, is treated differently, is treated separately in the Chumash. You have a similar thing with regard to the Kiyor. Right after introducing the idea of the Machzis HaShekel, so the Torah describes, Pasuk Yud Ches, Bosiso Kiyor Nechoshes, you should make out of copper a vessel to enable the Kohanim to wash their hands and their feet. And it goes into the discussion of how the Kohanim do exactly that. Here too, you have the same question. If this is one of the Klei HaMikdash, if this is one of the Klei HaMishkan, one of the utensils associated with the Mishkan, so how come it wasn't mentioned earlier in Parshas Truma, when we had the whole discussion about what the Mishkan contains? So here too, the Sfarno writes, Gam zeh hakli lo huskar lemalo im sha'or hakelim. The Kiyor as well was not mentioned earlier with the other Kelim. Unlike the other kelim in the Mishkan, the Aron, the Shulchan, the Menorah, the purpose of the Kiyor was not to bring down the Shechina into the Mishkan. It was a much more focused and directed purpose that the Kiyor served. It was to prepare the Kohanim for what they were going to do in the Mishkan, for their avodah, for their divine service. So as such, it has such a specific, targeted purpose, it doesn't make sense to mention it with the other Klei HaMishkan. In a sense, it doesn't even make sense to mention it together with the Mizbach HaKtoras. It's a very, very specific function that the Kiyor has, and therefore it's only mentioned over here. Skipping through the Psukim a little bit, we find towards the end of the first Aliyah a discussion about the importance of Shabbos. Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Yud Beis Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemar Ve'ato Daber Bnei Yisrael Lemar. You should speak to the Jewish people, saying, Ach es Shabsosai Tishmaru. Indeed, or however, you should observe my Shabbosos. Because Shabbos is a sign between me and myself and yourselves for all future generations, such that you should know that I am Hashem who is sanctifying you. What's Achas Shabbosai Tishmaru? However, you should keep my Shabbosos. So Rashi, quoting from Chazal, writes as follows, very famously, Afal pi shetiyu redufim uzrizim bezrizus hamelacha. Even though I know you're going to work really, really hard in putting the Mishkan together, Shabbos al tidoche miponeha. Don't push aside Shabbos in order to build the Mishkan. Right? The melacha, the creation of the Mishkan does not push aside Shabbos. Right? Okay, so that's Chazal learned out from this pasuk over here. Why doesn't the Meleches HaMishkan push aside Shabbos? Or to ask a variant on that question, we know that the Avodas HaMishkan, in other words, the Avoda, the sacrificial service that took place in the Mishkan and later in the Mikdash, to some extent does push aside Shabbos. The Karbanos Tamid were brought on Shabbos, the Karbanos Musaf were brought on Shabbos. There are many aspects of the Avodah, not all of them, but there were many aspects of the Avodah that continued on Shabbos unabated. So how is it that the construction of the Mishkan doesn't push aside Shabbos, but the functioning of the Mishkan, at least to an extent, does push aside Shabbos? So both of these, so this issue is addressed in two different ways, in two different comments that the Sfarno makes over here. He first writes as follows. How do you understand the continuation of this pasuk that says, Aches Shabbosai Tishmoru? However, you should keep my Shabbos. Right? In other words, the way we're interpreting from Chazal, don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. Why? So the pasuk continues, Ki osi beinu v'nechem l'doroseichem, because Shabbos is a sign between myself and yourselves for all your future generations. What exactly is the explanation? Why is the Torah seems to be saying, this is why the building of the Mishkan doesn't push aside Shabbos. So what is the point that the Torah is making? So the Sfarno says as follows, Ki osi beini uveinechem, it's a sign, Shabbos is a sign between Hashem and the Jewish people. Ve'im tekalkulu zeha os, ein shum mokom lasos Mishkan l'shochni b'sochichem. It's a very powerful way of looking at it. Since Shabbos is the sign between God and the Jewish people, it's the sign of the covenant, if you mess up that sign, if you somehow break that sign, you're mechallel Shabbos, so then there's no point to building the Mishkan. What's the whole idea of Shabbos? We enter into a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if you don't have that special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you break that special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you mechallel Shabbos, so then why would Hashem want to come visit you? Hashem only wants to come and visit us if we have a special relationship. In other words, the way the Sfarno frames it, it's not simply as if you have two mitzvos, and you're trying to figure out which one is the stronger mitzvah. You know, we have all kinds of different klolim, we have all kinds of different principles in halacha, asei doche lo saasei, you know, when you have a positive mitzvah, pushes aside a negative mitzvah, ein asei doche lo saasei vaasei. Okay, we have all different kinds of rules. So your temptation is to look at this conflict. There's on the one hand the mitzvah to build the Mishkan, on the other hand, the mitzvah of Shabbos. How do you weigh these two things one against the other? So that's what I was saying. That's a fundamentally wrong way of looking at it. It's not just simply that you have two mitzvahs and you have to figure out which one pushes aside the other one. It's that the whole existence of the Mishkan doesn't make sense if you don't first have Shabbos. It's a building block relationship. You first build the relationship through Shabbos, And then once we have a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, so we can say, you know, Ribbono Shel Olam, we'd like to bring your presence into our lives. But if we didn't have a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, so there's no point in building a Mishkan. The Shabbos is the prerequisite for building the Mishkan. And that's the way to look at it, says the Svarna. That's, of course, you understand that building the Mishkan wouldn't be Docha Shabbos, wouldn't set aside Shabbos, because there would be no point to having a Mishkan if we were Mechalel Shabbos in the process. Okay, but then that leads to the obvious follow-up question. So the functioning of the Mishkan did take place on Shabbos. So how do you explain that? Especially now that he's given such a fundamental way of understanding the relationship between Shabbos and the Mishkan, that you need Shabbos in order to even make the Mishkan make sense. So then how is it that they brought the Karbanos on Shabbos? So a little bit later on, he writes the following. The Pasuk says in Tesvav, Sheshes Yomim Ye Oseh Melocha. 6 days work may be done. And of course it's very striking how the Torah uses the passive form of the verb in this particular case. Usually when the Torah has the equivalent of this pasuk, it says Sheshes Yomim Tasa Melachtecha, an active verb. For 6 days you should do work. Here it doesn't speak in terms of you doing work, it talks in terms of the work being done. Sheshes Yomim Ye Oseh Melocha. Why the change? Why the passive form of the verb as opposed to the active form of the verb? So the Sfarno says, what the Torah is trying to say over here is the following. Hine b'sheshes yemei hamasa tuchlu la'asos meleches hamishkan. The Torah is not just talking generally, you know, you should work for 6 days. The Torah is saying specifically when it comes to the meleches hamishkan, the work on the Mishkan can be done during the 6 days of the week. Sheshes Yomim Ye Oseh Melocha. Not just work shall be done for 6 days, but work can be done for 6 days. There's no reason why you have to build the Mishkan on Shabbos. Moshe Lamad Dover Dome, a few months back in Eretz Yisrael, it was a big, I don't know if you could talk about a big controversy in Eretz Yisrael, because every day is another controversy in Eretz Yisrael over something or another. But there was a controversy in Eretz Yisrael when they started vaccinating, that the government wanted to set up vaccination on Shabbos. And the government claimed it's pikuach nefesh. It's pikuach nefesh. So, taka, it's very, very important to get vaccinated. But all the rabbonim said back, it's pikuach nefesh perhaps to get a vaccine. But there's no pikuach nefesh that you have to get a davka on Shabbos. A person, rachmano litzlan, collapses on Shabbos and needs immediate medical attention. Yeah, okay, so that's called pikuach nefesh. That, you know, you can't tell the guy, would you mind, you know, maybe hold off on having the medical issues till after Shabbos so we don't have to be mechal Shabbos. That's not really an option. But in the case of the vaccine, there's nothing pressing that says that the person has to get, I mean, I guess, unless it's a very, very unique kind of circumstance. I can't imagine what that would be. There's nothing pressing that says the person has to get it on Shabbos as opposed to getting it on Sunday. It's not an immediate medical need. So all the Rabbanim said, you know, Jews should not be vaccinating Jews on Shabbos. You want to set up a system where non-Jews are vaccinating non-Jews on Shabbos? Okay, gesundheit, maybe that's a very good idea. But that Jews should be vaccinating Jews on Shabbos, that's not correct. I don't think it worked. But again, that was the position of the Rabbanim. That's not called pikuach nefesh. So by the same token over here, it's a big mitzvah to build the Mishkan. But if you take off Shabbos, the Mishkan's still going to be built. It's still going to be built. You don't have to build a davka on Shabbos. Sheshes Yomim Ye Oseh Melocha. The Meleches HaMishkan can be done on all 6 days of the week. Ve'im Kein Ein Roi Shetidchu Shabbos Miponeo. And if that's the case, it's not appropriate to push off Shabbos in order to build the Mishkan. Why? She'ein Shum Mitzvah Docha Shabbos. The only time that a mitzvah pushes off Shabbos is where that mitzvah is associated with a specific time, and that time comes out on Shabbos, and there is no other time in which the mitzvah can be done. And the Sfarno gives two examples of this phenomenon. Kimal avoda, like the avodas hamikdash, like you can't do it on any other day. What do you mean? Well, the carbon tamid has to be brought daily. That's why it's called the carbon tamid. The carbon musaf of Shabbos has to be brought on Shabbos. That's why it's called the carbon musaf of Shabbos. So in other words, these things, these mitzvos, have a specific time. They have to be brought on Shabbos. Okay, so then they tack a push aside Shabbos. It's not an expression of a lack of relationship that we have with the Ribbono Shel Olam that we do these mitzvahs on Shabbos, because this is the only time in which they can be done. The same with a milo bismano, when the eighth day after the baby boy's birth comes out on Shabbos. So we know that that mitzvah pushes aside Shabbos. So why milo and avoda? Because they have specific times associated with them. Now, the Gemara learns both Mila and Avoda out from specific psukim that indicate that Mila and Avoda take place even on Shabbos. But the Sfarno is explaining the rationale behind the fact that Mila is Docha Shabbos and Avoda is Docha Shabbos because of the fact that they have this Zman Kavur, this set time. Aval kishe'efshir lasos ha-mitzvah b'yom acher, ein adolches ha-shabbos klal. But when you have a mitzvah that could be done on a different day, so then that never takes precedence instead of Shabbos, and that's what the Torah is saying, sheshis yomim ye'osa melocha, since the melachas ha-mishkan can be done during the other 6 days of the week, it's not going to be docha Shabbos. Let's just quickly add the following. The Torah then goes on to share the famous psukim, v'shomru v'nei Yisrael es ha-shavos, lasos es ha-shavos l'dorosam bris olam. Right, the Jewish people should guard the Shabbos, lasos es ha-shavos l'dorosam, to make the Shabbos for all of their future generations. What does that mean? What's lasos es ha-shavos? So here the Sfarno says very beautifully, and again, psukim we say every Shabbos, so it's good to have the Sfarno's interpretation. V'shomru v'nei Yisrael es ha-shabbos ba'olam hazeh. Klal Yisrael should keep the Shabbos in this world. Lasos es ha-shabbos, such that they should carry out Shabbos b'yom shekulo Shabbos. In olam haba, in the next world, in a so to speak, a time which is purely Shabbos. In other words, this pasuk which we say Shabbos in and Shabbos out is saying that if we keep Shabbos in this world, we'll be zocheh to bask in the glory of the Shechinah in the next world. V'shomru v'nei Yisrael es ha-shabbos here, lasos es ha-shabbos l'dorosam, forever and ever, will be zocha to keep Shabbos in the next world. Halavai that will be zocha to the fulfillment of that pasuk as per the Sfarno. Rabbi Chananah ben Akasha Omer.